You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good time?
All right, let's go. Mike Salk Show here on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com as well. Hopefully you're enjoying your Thursday morning. We're nearly all the way through this week, just a couple more days to go. So let's get after it today. It was a good day for us yesterday. I got to see something pretty cool.
A good day?
Yeah, well, it was good.
Oof.
It was a great day for Justin.
Yes, I was just thinking.
It was a good day for me. I've experienced this before, so I don't mean to make it sound like old hat, but really cool opportunity the Mariners gave us yesterday to come over to the ballpark, take a little batting practice on the field at T-Mobile. Live BP, by the way, not even off a pitching machine. We had live BP, which was awesome. There was a good group of media folks there. Chris Egan was there and, you know, some of the beat writers and folks from the Mariners group. Yeah, there were just a lot of people there. Ethan Stoll was out there with food. Manny Chao was out there with Manny's and Rogers and that type of stuff.
George Shambrewing.
It was a pretty great experience out there. I liked it. Justin, well, I was worried we were going to actually have to use a hook to pull him off that field.
I was like, can I crawl into the tarp? Is there a way I can stay here? Did not want to leave that place.
Baseball stadiums are unique, right? I mean, I think that the field in baseball is more holy than a basketball court or a hockey rink or even a football field. Not to say that it wouldn't be unbelievable to play basketball on, you know, a famous basketball court or anything like that. Those things are very cool.
There's a different lore of a baseball field.
A baseball field, maybe because of the groundskeeping that goes into it, the natural ground. I mean, like, you could go out at Lumen Field and it would be great. You're on that turf, and like that has its own kind of cool thing. Maybe you've never been on turf before, but I don't think it's quite the holiness level of being on a professional baseball field.
And I've said it before. I've said it on the show. I wouldn't be here without baseball. It's just that special. It's something I've learned more from than maybe anything else in my life. And it's just a game, right? Everybody talks about this, but the leadership, the humility, what it means to be a teammate, how to manage ups and downs. It's a long season. How to maintain a competitive edge, knowing, you know, how the game changes literally with every pitch. It took me a long time to realize that all of those things mirror everything in life. Especially when it comes to leadership and managing ups and downs.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, and when you come from like a small town or an underserved community or a geographically isolated place like I did, there's not a lot of options for guys when you graduate high school. It was like, for me, a lot of my buddies, it was military or workforce. That was it. Unless you were, you know, a valedictorian and got a scholarship somewhere, or if you were lucky enough to get noticed somehow to play a sport somewhere, there weren't a lot of choices for you.
So were you a valedictorian?
I was not a valedictorian.
Okay. So what?
I wouldn't even say I was an average student. I didn't try at all.
All right.
I wish that's probably one of my biggest regrets. I didn't try hard in school.
And clearly you did not go off into the military.
Nope.
Hair's too long for that.
I didn't have long hair, yeah.
All right.
I mean, the good jobs in my town were working at Les Schwab or getting a UPS gig, and they are good jobs. Those are really good jobs there for people.
So I'm not knocking it. You take off to go play baseball at Shoreline Community College. So fast forward to yesterday, what do you experience when you're out there? Because what I saw from you, like the running around, like I was imagining you essentially like Will Ferrell.
Oh, my God!
Yes.
Santa here? I know him.
I would say you had that level of, like, if you're looking for an excitement level of, like, what did Justin look like out on the field? No more today, by the way. She is out today, so DJ is in with us. That's how I would describe it. It was a lot like Will Ferrell when Santa was coming.
Yeah, I mean, it was media batting practice skills contest. So I was like, well, I'm going to get out here and try to get my reps in. I'm going to try to get some ground balls.
Right. So did you hit any home runs?
I did not hit any dingers.
Okay.
I didn't realize that how much rust would be on a 14 or 15, however many years it's been since I played college baseball.
Interesting.
On the body. But it was, oh man, it was unbelievable. And I was watching other people. Ethan Stoll was there. He served, you know, the lunch for everyone. And I'm like, I can go to an Ethan Stoll restaurant someday. I'm never going to be able to get a chance to come out here and take ground balls and swings. You guys can all go eat. I'm going to stay out here at third base and see if I can get hurt.
What was the biggest play you made out there?
I took a good backhand I was actually playing short with Rick Riz, which was another weird dream. Well, the childhood voice of my life.
Yeah, he also had a glove from like 1932, which was interesting.
It was his childhood glove. Yes. I posted a picture of it, and it was very cool. Anyway, I took a backhand ground ball at shortstop, and I was like, oh, there's that juice.
That muscle memory.
Man, you snap back into that instinctual.
It's pretty cool.
Baseball is just very special.
Yeah, it is. I got a text here that comes in and says, holy, really? Yeah, I would say so.
Yes.
For me, I mean, look, obviously, you know, that word means something different to different people. I'm not trying to make a comparison to what you may feel if you're a religious person, but baseball has a baseball field has a level of holy ground to it. It's an analogy. It doesn't necessarily need to fit the exact definition. I absolutely think so. Yeah, when you're out there, I've been lucky enough to play on three different baseball fields in my time. I played at Yankee Stadium, I played a game at Fenway Park, and I've been out at T-Mobile a number of times. And yeah, it does have that feeling. I mean, I've been and walked on other fields also, because generally before a baseball game, if you're covering a team, you're out on the field. That's sort of where some of the work goes on before a game. So yeah, you go to Anaheim for a game and you're out on that field. You go to Detroit for a game, you're out in Comerica. So I've been on a lot of fields, but I've played taking ground balls or whatever on those three. And each time, you know, you have to just sort of remind, oh my God, this is unique. This is special. And the grass feels different. It looks different. Everything about it is really, really cool.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. The hops were true.
Yes. You didn't get any bad bounces.
Think about.
No, it's not like playing at whatever field you grew up in. Same here with rocks and like, oh, did they drag for rocks before?
Right. You got there picking rocks. You had to go pick 20 rocks before every inning.
I took a ground ball straight in the nose off a rock. That one hurt. That's for sure. Playing shortstop as a kid.
Sure.
I thought I'd broken my nose. That was, whew. Yeah, didn't shrink it any. The nose is still prominent here on the face. Well, anyway, it was a lot of fun.
I just want to thank the Mariners. It was an unbelievable experience. That's in a field and a place that I've been watching my entire life.
Yeah, it was
obviously the Kingdome. It wasn't the Kingdome, but still.
It was probably a little better. I'm not going to lie.
I don't play on concrete.
A little more special than getting out there on the Kingdome concrete. So, yeah, thanks to the Mariners. That was a lot of fun yesterday. Speaking of excitement, anybody more excited for this weekend than Pete Carroll is for Geno Smith?
He has been highly thought of by the organization, by his teammates. Obviously, the fans responded too. We're grateful that he's been with us. And so now that it's his time and his chance to do this and help his club, you know, I couldn't be more excited for him. And he's going to be really tuned in. He's really smart at their scheme and system and all of that, really sharp in the huddle at the line of scrimmage, all that kind of stuff he's really good at. So, yeah, he gives himself every chance to be, you know, have a good performance and help us win.
Well, I love that. I'm glad Pete is excited. I'm glad he feels like Geno is prepared. I mean, that's not ever been what I think we've noticed watching Geno in preseason games or watching him when he came in last year against the Jets. He never did seem like all of the control at the line of scrimmage and all of that was necessarily his strong suit. Thankfully, it looked to be the case when we watched him a week ago on Thursday night when he came in all of a sudden in the third quarter and then led that drive in the fourth. Yeah, I think that there was like, okay, maybe there is more to Geno than we've seen in the first few years here in the preseason. I'm glad Pete's excited for him to get his opportunity. I'm excited to learn more. I'm excited.
You want to learn more about Waldron.
I don't care about Geno. I got to be honest. Like I don't particularly care about him. I'm glad for him. I'm happy for him. But I don't have a lot invested in Geno Smith. I've got a lot invested in the Seahawks, in their offense, and in Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll, Shane Waldron, and I want to find out what the heck is really going on with all of those people, and putting Geno Smith in as a starter actually helps me learn a lot more about the Seahawks. So Pete is excited because he's a coach, and it's up to him to be excited for his players, and that's exactly the way he should feel today. I'm excited not because of Geno, but because of Russ. I want to find out what this means. I want to find out if there's real talent there, if there's issues with the scheme, if Russell is holding them back, if Russell is holding them together. All of those things are on the table here over the next few weeks as Geno Smith is inserted into that starting role and we find out what things look like with somebody other than Russell Wilson. For years, we've believed that that would be a disaster. Will it? Is Russell just covering for everybody? Or are there real issues with the way Russell runs this offense? We don't know that yet. I've heard all sorts of speculation. I've certainly read it in social media. I know you've read it on Reddit.
Oh, yeah.
But we haven't actually had a controlled experiment to find out. That will change Sunday in Pittsburgh. All right, coming up next, Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner. They've been linked ever since 2012, and usually that has been a good thing. Today, they find themselves on the same list, and this time it's not. I'll tell you what you need to know. Next, Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Texter here says, fellas, a little curious to get your opinions on Bobby Wagner's answers to questions yesterday. Do they satisfy you? Stick around. We're going to talk about Bobby at 7 o'clock this morning, I promise. A lot going on today. Jerry DePoto will join us at 8:30. Right now, it's time for Need to Know.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, 3 years ago, the Seahawks had three marquee players. They needed to sign two of them. Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, Frank Clark. They signed the first two for huge money. They traded the third. Yesterday, none of the three practiced for the Seahawks. We know that Russell's going to miss time with his finger injury, but Bobby Wagner missing practice, entirely concerning, I would say. He has a knee injury. It was described as a bruise. He did speak after practice, so hopefully he's going to be good to go. But Bobby Wagner, Russell Wilson, your two captains and both guys who were missing practice yesterday, drafted together in 2012, signed their big contracts in the same offseason. Really odd just to see them both not out there. Chris Carson, a non-participant as well, as he tries to work himself back from that neck injury. So, yeah, heading into what is a huge game with your backup quarterback, not exactly what you're looking for. When we watch this team in preseason, they struggled badly, right? And I think we were able to accept it because their starters weren't playing. At least that's what we said. We knew the depth would be a concern, but we certainly hoped good health would favor this roster. Well, 6 weeks into the season, I don't know if we could say that has been the case. Seahawks have a top-heavy roster, but a few at the top are hurt, and others have not exactly played up to their expected level. And if we hope to learn a little about this offense without Russell Wilson this weekend, what could we also learn if Bobby were to miss a game? The team has struggled against the passing concepts, the same one over and over again. We've heard that there are issues with the linebacker play from Pete Carroll, so I would also be curious to know what it looked like with some different personnel in there as well.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, after a day to rest, reflect, watch film, and of course travel to Nashville, the Kraken will be back on the ice tonight. They'll make their debut on Root Sports. Predators were led in scoring last year by Roman Yossi, who led them in goals. Any guesses? Anyone? Bueller? That would be none other than your boy, Cali, though. That's right. Kaylee Young Croak, 13 goals before being plucked away by the Kraken this offseason. Curious to see who'll get the start in net. Philip Grubauer was good, not great, I would say, in his first start. So given that this is supposed to be a partnership and that they play again Saturday, Monday, Tuesday before coming home, I would expect Chris Drieger to start at least two of those games, and I would think maybe even tonight. We'll find out after their morning skate today. Overall, opening nights of hockey on ESPN and Turner have been very successful. ESPN reporting huge gains in audience with their opening doubleheader from the opening tripleheader last year on NBC Sports. They were up 19% overall, despite one fewer game. That is awfully impressive. They were up in most demos, too, including 28% in that 18-49 group, so younger people watching these games as well. Kraken game, by the way, peaked at over 1 million viewers, second highest for a late-game opener on record. Those numbers don't even include the streaming views on ESPN+. So younger people watching more without including the digital viewing, really good sign for the NHL. They made the worst decision any league has ever made 17 years ago when they decided to leave ESPN and go to NBC. ESPN ignored them for almost two decades, wiped them completely off the map, and now you get to see the difference as you see them leading SportsCenter and right there on ESPN.com and right on the scroll. Hockey will be back in the national conversation again. That's a really good thing for the NHL and, of course, for the Kraken.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, one game left to finish up the divisional round of the baseball postseason. Dodgers and Giants had never met in the playoffs before now, and they're determined to get their money's worth. Julio Urias against Logan Webb, Game 5 tonight. Winner takes on the Braves in the NLCS. As for the ALCS, that matchup is set. Red Sox, Astros, they will start tomorrow night in Houston. NFL action tonight, Bucks and Eagles. Thursday night football, it means it's been a full week since Russell Wilson hurt his finger.
You all right?
I've never said that word on the radio before. Have you ever said Russell Wilson? I've never said those two words
together
on the radio, so I just apparently couldn't do it. We're practically a quarter of the way there, though. If it's a four-week deal and Russ is hurt a week ago, we're almost a quarter of the way there. Good for us. Tom Brady, 4-1 and rolling along, certainly, even without Rob Gronkowski, who will be out tonight. Jalen Hurts for the Eagles. They are 2-3, but coming off an exciting comeback win over the Panthers. Those are three things you need to know. We give it to you every hour at quarter past.
I don't even know how to phrase this question, but you mentioned it at the beginning of the show, what you're going to learn from the Seahawks without Russ, right?
Yeah.
Like with that variable out of the equation. Excuse me. Wow.
See, everybody's struggling this
I know, man. That's tough. Same thing I was going to say then. Well, that's just the offensive side, but if Bobby's out.
Well, and I don't think he will be. I mean, again, the way he was talking after practice yesterday, I didn't hear him say, like, hey, I'm really injured and it's unlikely I'm going to go or anything like that. It's concerning, certainly, to see him miss a practice with a bruise issue on his knee. But it is, you know, again, just sort of interesting to speculate. It stinks when you lose players when they're out. But it does give you an opportunity to see what they mean to your team, right? What their replacement level is. Right. We've often said, and Brock and I used to do this all the time, we would try to rank the most the Seahawks that would be toughest to lose, who would be the most irreplaceable. And the assumption has always been Russell Wilson is number one on that list. And I remember having this conversation last year and saying, without Russell, this is a 2-14 roster. Right. Without Russell Wilson, I think this team is outright bad. 2-14. So you're going to get your chance to see what that looks like now. Has the roster improved significantly since last year? I think they've made some changes, hopefully for the better. You're going to get Gerald Everett back this week. You've made some changes on your offensive line, right? I mean, there's some reasons to believe that DK continues to grow and get better. So there's some reasons to believe that your offense might be better than it was a year ago. But it's been my belief that the Seahawks are a 2-14 team without Russell Wilson. So when you get to see them, now they're not going to play the best of the league, but you are going to see them against Pittsburgh, who's a good enough team, New Orleans, who's a good enough team, and then Jacksonville, who stinks. The goal is to go 2-1 during that stretch, right? If they go 2-1 without Russell Wilson, you're unbelievably excited.
Yes.
The expectation is that they go 1-2, beat Jacksonville, and lose to both Pittsburgh and New Orleans. We'll see. I mean, you get a chance to see what the offense and what this, I mean, defense is a whole separate issue, but what does this offense look like without Russell? We've never seen it. We've never seen it. Not since Tavares Jackson was leading this team in 2011. It's been a long time.
It's insane to think about.
It's crazy to think about how long that's been. And before him, you know, it was Matt Hasselbeck and it was Charlie Whitehurst. I mean, like those are the three people that quarterbacked this team before Russell did.
Man, remember the John Kitna years?
Yeah, I mean, you go back. I don't. Like, I wasn't here.
Oof.
I mean, but I certainly know that those existed with Trent Dilfer and,
yeah,
heck, Brock Heward at some point. So, yeah, I think that it is an opportunity. I don't know that they're going to win the games.
Well, yeah, and you know every team on that, or every player on that team knows they all have to step up in big ways. So this is another big proving point for every other player as well. Like, show what you can do now because you don't have anybody to bail you out.
100% true. All right, coming up, we just mentioned Matt Hasselbeck. We've certainly enjoyed conversations with him. But always fun to hear athletes with the people they are closest to. You're going to get a little of that next as a Hall of Famer and former teammate calls in to chat with Matt. Don't go anywhere. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
The Matt Hasselbeck Show, presented by Infinity of Bellevue and Linwood. Seahawks legend Matt Hasselbeck takes you inside the Seahawks and the NFL for a full hour, exclusively on the Mike Salk Show.
Hello, Matt. Good to have you this week.
How are we doing?
Well, it's been an odd week, I'm not going to lie, here in Seattle. A lot of excitement last night with a winter sports franchise finally here. After well over a decade. That was a blast last night.
Yeah, that was very cool. That was very cool. I mean, I couldn't stay up that late out here in Boston, but that was really cool to see. And, you know, hockey's huge here. So to see hockey in Seattle is really neat.
You like the uniforms? You like the bright white?
Love the cool colors. I actually am a fan of that alternate logo.
Yeah.
So I like the S, but that alternate, like, I don't want to screw
the
up.
The Space Needle anchor thing?
It's really cool.
Yeah.
It's really cool. I've got a hat coming to me with that logo. I'm excited about it.
I like when they have the serpent kind of wrap around the Space Needle logo. I think that's pretty sweet. I like the whole thing, though. I'm into it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's creative, and it's awesome, and it's great that we have a franchise. Very excited.
So that's obviously the good news. The bad news is we talked to you Wednesday. The next night, Russell, you know, injures the finger. We now know what mallet finger is here in Seattle, which we didn't know before. Now what?
Yeah.
What
Most linemen know what that means.
Oh, yeah. I bet they do. But they don't have to throw a ball. There's no way he could have played through that, right?
Well, I mean, you never know, like, until you try. And, you know, I've had injuries where you're not sure. You're like, hey, they'll ask you, hey, can you go? And you're like, I don't know. I need to give me a ball, and then I'll tell you. And then it looks like that's what he did, where it was like, hey, I'm hurt, but, you know, I'm okay. I can do it. Probably give me a ball. And then when you just saw the look on his face, and he was trying. And it's not so much a matter of pain. It's more of a matter of function. Like, does it work? And, you know, so that was super disappointing for him to have to watch the end of that game. So, yeah, I feel for him for sure.
How impressive is 9+ year? I mean, all of those starts in a row. How impressive is that?
Yeah, it's really impressive. And, you know, that's one of the things I see a lot of these quarterbacks now, young guys, some older guys, you know, Lamar Jackson, you know, some of these guys that are really doing it with their arm and their legs, but they're taking a beating. And I always thought that early on, Seattle did such a great job with using Russell Wilson with the zone read game, where they would close out games. It was him and Marshawn. They would close out games, but he was not taking big hits. He'd run out of bounds. He'd get 9 yards and slide. And then so you're at least minimizing the risk a little bit, because he is going to hold the ball in the pocket and make those Houdini type plays. But now at least the risk factor of staying healthy was lower. And it's been really, really impressive, the longevity, but not only the longevity, but also just playing at a high level.
Well, and of course, you know, he gets hurt just on a throw in the pocket, right? It's none of that that ends up injuring him for the first time in his career and causing him to miss games. It's just a regular old throw from the pocket where Aaron Donald just got a little too close and, you know, sort of a freak thing, of course.
Yeah, well, Steve Young would tell you, you know, and I used to work with him, and basically he, to me, is like one of the first really, really mobile quarterbacks. But he would tell you it is more dangerous in that pocket. Like, you're someone's rolling up on your ankle, they're rolling up on your knees, your follow through is going to hit a helmet or a bicep like Aaron Donald's, you know, just, like, that's where the danger is. And then, you know, when I watched Brett Favre, when I was his backup for the first 3 years of my career, you know, he had the streak going, still has the streak in terms of like staying healthy or playing in games. And he would always just keep his feet moving. And he was like, it's dangerous in there. I got to keep my feet moving. And so we'd kind of make fun of him a little bit because of how active he was after he'd throw the ball. But clearly it was a good way to not get hurt. And you know, you just kind of hope for the best and got to get a little bit fortunate.
Was there a moment with Favre, I mean, like, where he either had to tough through something crazy that you were there for to keep the streak alive, or you thought it was going to end, you know, I don't know about the crazy Cal Ripken rumors or anything like that, but like, was there a moment where you thought, oh yeah, this thing is going to not continue, but Favre found a way to make it happen?
For sure. Like, so many times. I can't even tell you how many times. We played Monday night down in Tampa, and he leaves the game, and everyone, including his wife, told me, like, hey, he's going to miss time. During the week in practice, he was in a walking boot. Friday practice, he's got a size 13 shoe on one foot, a size 15 shoe on the other, just to see if he can go. And I'm like, there's no way I'm going to get my first start. I was like, ready to go. I was all excited. He somehow plays in the game and plays amazing. He's like NFC player of the week. And there were other times where he was hurt and banged up, and we just happened to have a bye the next week. I mean, the level of toughness was off the charts, but also the level of just like things that just kind of came like sort of aligned so that he was able to get that extra day or get that extra week. But truly, the guy was unbelievable at playing through injury, and not just playing through injury, playing really, really well through injury. That was amazing to see firsthand, up close and personal.
Well, I won't set you up for obviously getting yourself in trouble by asking who was tougher, Brett Favre or Steve Hutchinson, but we do have Hutch on the line right now, a former teammate of yours, and I'm guessing one of the tougher players you ever played with?
Hey, no doubt. And Hutch can speak to Brett Favre because Hutch played with him in Minnesota. What's up, Hutch?
What's up, fellas? How we doing?
We're great. We're talking about the toughness of Brett Favre and seeing it up close and personal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, the thing about Brett is he is one of the toughest guys I've ever played with, but he'll let you know about it too. So if he has an injury or he's got, you know, his ankle, like you were saying, Matt, one day he'll show up, his ankle will be the size of a cantaloupe, and he'll show everybody in the locker room, you know, but then he'll go out there and do it. So you can't really say anything. But that's Brett. He wasn't going to miss a start. He really didn't care what it took. I mean, well, you know, probably better than anybody, Matt. Like, what's the story? The game in Dallas, was it the Thanksgiving game where he literally super glued a tongue depressor to his finger or something just so he could play?
Yeah, it's crazy.
It was crazy. Like, he does all kinds of stuff.
What's the worst injury that you had to play through, Hutch?
You know, I always had shoulder issues. It always seemed to be something that happened early in the season that you just kind of play through. And then I came from the school of thought where, you know, if I were to make a Pro Bowl, I was earn my way into the Pro Bowl, get voted in. I felt like I was, you know, it was an honor and I wanted to play, and probably wasn't always the smartest thing, an extra game on top of it. But clearly when I broke my leg, you can't do anything about that. But a shoulder injury, something that you have to get cleaned up or operated on after the season, those things kind of dragged on, you know, especially when you're making it into the postseason. And back in the day where we actually played 4 preseason games and played in a lot of the snaps, I mean, it just kind of adds up.
Well, I definitely feel like the bump in the log here. We got Steve Hutchinson joining us with Matt Hasselbeck, and, you know, I'm just me. And I appreciate you coming on with us today, Steve. The emotions last week had to be high. You talk about being honored. You were honored here in Seattle with your Hall of Fame ring. You received the ring here. I know you've been back here, I think, since you left the first time. But what was it like being in the building on Thursday night and receiving that honor?
It was great. You know, I've actually been employed by the Seahawks for the last 3 or 4 years in a scouting consulting role. So I'm back in Seattle quite often, with the exception of last year with COVID, obviously. But, you know, I'm back there 3 to 4 weeks a year for draft meetings or the end of camp or something. So I'm kind of used to being back around the facility. The stadium, though, was a different setting. As we all know, when I left Seattle after the 2005 season, you know, it's still to this day a sore subject in a lot of circles. And so for me it was important for me to go back where it all started for me and get that ring and be able to address the crowd and let them know how much it meant to me to be a part of those teams that built up to make that first Super Bowl run for Seattle. And it was special to see, you know, the crowd kind of accept it and embrace it and go cheer and all that. It was something I'd look forward to for a while.
You remember the first time you met Matt?
I don't remember the specific first time. I remember it was right after I got drafted. You know, we had the mini camp 2 weeks after practice, or 2 weeks after the draft, I should say. And I flew in, and I want to say I kind of met him kind of standing by the old equipment room window. I think I was trying to get, you know, my uniform or my practice gear or something, and I think he kind of came up and introduced himself. Well, I'm not mistaken, but there's a lot of guys I could say. I just, you know, it's funny. You see these guys, you talk to these guys, and where we've come, you know, where we started, where we are now is Robbie Tobeck and all these guys. But, you know, to look back and at that time in 2001, just a rookie, I know there was a lot of expectations for me, but none put on any harder than myself on myself. But it's just funny to see first full circle how close we all are, friends now, and how, you know, all the things we've been through. But yeah, no, Matt, I think Matt and I were in the same boat. You know, we came in, we're expected to be the guy right off the bat, and of course Matt had been in the league for 3 years, but we looked at each other like, I'm gonna try to protect you. You're gonna try to get us in the end zone, and it's just funny how far we've come.
Yeah, Hutch, I remember that first mini camp after the draft, and all the coaches like kind of were whispering to me, like, you have no idea how good this guy is. We drafted Corin Robinson and Steve Hutchinson that year in the first round, and they were just, you know, basically just gassing him up so much. So the first, at the end of the first practice, I'm having the offense like break down, and I say, and he's a rookie, and I'm like, all right, Hutch, break us down, you know, like offense on three. And the look of sort of like disrespect I got from the older guys, Chris Gray, Robbie Toback, you know, Walter Jones, because there's a hierarchy in that O-line room. And they were like, wait, you just asked our rookie to break us down? Like, what are you doing? I got a little carried away with the scouting reports I was getting behind the scenes, I guess.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. I could just see the look on Robbie's face right now. I mean, you know, Walt, who knows if Walt was even paying attention, but Robbie and Chris for sure were we're probably like, you, what are you doing?
You know, it's funny. Brock, I think, tells a story, and I think he's told this on the air. I hope I'm not screwing this up, Hutch, about you as a rookie and coming in and having to face, I don't know who would have been on the defensive line, but somebody who was just, you know, who was great, and you're like, man, I don't even know whether I can do this in the NFL. And obviously you figured it out, went on to the Hall of Fame career. But do you remember those moments of sort of trepidation at the beginning?
Well, I always tell the story, and I'm sure he's probably – he might be referring to this story. So we're playing the Dolphins at UW Stadium in 2001. And this is like – it was early in the season. It was October. And so they had their – you know, of course, they had a really good front seven, you know. But the guy I specifically was going against was Darryl Gardner. And Darryl Gardner, if you don't remember, was literally one of the largest humans I've ever seen. And not like a big, like a Gilbert Brown large. Like, this guy was like 6'6", 6'7". He had a complete, he looked like a transformer. Like, he was like trim waist, his feet up, his back was wide. Like, this guy was like a monster. And so, In that time, Miami was playing like an even front defense, which means both guards were covered. They didn't have a traditional true nose guard over the center. Well, Robbie Toback, being the smart aleck he is, he's uncovered all day, right? So all his job is to do is kind of help out where he's needed in pass protection, because he doesn't have a guy lined up on him. So it's towards the end of the – it was right at the end of the first quarter. We had the ball. We were down driving, quarter ends, you know, we go, both teams start walking to the other end of the field to set up for the second quarter. And Darryl Gardner goes to me, goes, hey, rookie, you keep playing hard. And Toback, which if you got to know Robbie, I mean, I'm sure you guys do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know Matt does, but Robbie's going, keep playing hard. He's kicking your feet, you know, beep. And I'm sitting there going, no, sir, I'm not. I'm just trying to do my job. Just like, don't listen to him. Like, I'm just, they pay me to do this. I'm just trying to keep you away from the quarterback. And so I'm like, Robbie, shut the hell up. You're not even blocking anybody. But that's Toback. You know, that's kind of sums up our O-line group too. I mean, we were the tightest group of any team on any group I've ever played on, that Seattle group up front. And, but that's kind of how we made each other better. I mean, it was we always had a healthy competition and a healthy way of pushing each other. But we had each other's back, and those are the times. Those are the stories you miss.
It's good stuff. Hutch, congratulations.
For
and
sure.
The Hall of Fame thing is obviously there's no bigger honor for a person who played in the NFL to get that ring, and I love the idea of doing it here in Seattle. Congratulations, and continue good luck.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
You're the best, Hutch. Thanks, Hutch. Love you, man.
Thanks, Matt. Talk to you.
All right, there you go. Steve Hutchinson calling right in to the Matt Hasselbeck Show. You're really just kind of moving in and setting up shop here, Matt. You just bring your friends over.
I can't take any credit for that. I just love that, though. Robbie Toback writing checks from Hutch's bank account, talking smack to the guy that he has to block all day, not the guy that Toback's blocking all day.
No, of course not.
That's really great. Yeah. It's really great. You know, Walter Jones yelled at me for that one time. I was talking smack to Joey Porter in the Super Bowl. And Joey Porter, I wasn't blocking Joey Porter all day. Walter Jones was. And he was like, hey, just please don't do that. He's just going to incite him.
Just tone it down.
I got this. Just walk away.
That group was pretty close. I've heard that before. And we've heard that from Toback. And I know Walt's talked about that. It must have been unique to be around that group of offensive linemen.
It really was great, and they're really smart guys. You know, there's always like these jokes about offensive linemen and, you know, like whatever the standard jokes are. But this was the brightest group on our team. They were the most clock awareness, just X's and O's, you know, just really all of it. It was an impressive group. And to see Hutch get to come back, because he left, you know, in the, under the poison pill situation, kind of left in sort of a bad way, and it really kind of affected us in a lot of different ways. But to see him being able to kind of come full circle and – you know, he mentioned he's doing scouting for the Seahawks now, which is great. But to do it there publicly in front of the fans, to just kind of show who he really is and how much our times together in Seattle meant was really, really cool. And, of course, the night before I wasn't able to be out there, but I'm getting like 1 a.m. FaceTimes from Max Strong and Hutch and, you know, all these guys that, you know, I don't know where they were or what they were doing, probably smoking cigars somewhere together and thinking I'm going to pick up a FaceTime at 1:30 in the morning.
No, you don't do that?
Not for them.
What does Sarah say if you do that? If you just pick up one of those 1:30 FaceTime, is she happy with that or not?
You know what? Anybody who has kids like in college, like your phone's kind of always on alert. So you get like that 1:30 a.m. call, like as a parent, like you're picking it up, but you're on call all the time as a parent. But
buddies.
when it's Max Strong, you know, that one can probably wait the next day.
Yeah. I got a texter here, Matt, who thinks I am tougher than I've given myself credit for. He says, don't downplay yourself, Salk. I'm sure you've gone on the air a couple of times with a sore throat or maybe even a little tired. So I feel like I'm sort of in that category with Russ or maybe Brett Favre.
Yeah. Does hungover count as tired? I'm asking for somebody else.
I mean, I wouldn't know. I have hungover.
You would never know. Yeah.
Make any sense to me. Let's bring it back to Russ for a minute or two, because this is obviously, I mean, we haven't seen this since Russ got here. He's never missed a game. He's barely missed a snap since showing up here in Seattle. And let's say it is 3 weeks, which is sort of what the estimate looks like. We'll see Geno Smith for three games against first Pittsburgh, then New Orleans, and then Jacksonville. What do you think we can learn about this team, about Russell, about the offense, about Shane Waldron, by not having him in there for a little while?
Yeah, well, there can be positives out of this, right? Like, because it's not like everyone else is playing all that great right now. Like, there's some people that are doing their job. There's others that are not getting it done. So this kind of brings it back into like, hey, we have to play assignment football. We can't just kind of play hero football. We can't play defense like we know. Well, Russell Wilson and DK and Tyler, they'll just, you know, they'll bail us out if we get down too much. And, you know, on offense, hey, we can't. You know, we can't get away from sort of this Pete Carroll formula that he knows that he believes in, how this team was built. You know, run the ball, you know, take shots when they're there and make it happen. Like, there's a formula that Pete believes in. And, you know, I think that maybe they've gotten away from it a little bit at times because of the other stuff that they're talented enough to do. But this could maybe be a situation where for the next 3 weeks, hey, this team kind of, you know, gets back to fundamentals and technique and stuff like that, and then when Russell is able to come back, it's just kind of an added bonus. He's almost like he's coming back to a more talented or more effective team.
You had a couple injuries in your career, right, where you missed a few games and were forced to watch. What did you learn during that time of being forced to watch your team?
Yeah, it's incredibly frustrating. I would say that, number one. Like, it's incredibly frustrating. You know, the early things that I learned are different than the later things that I learned. Like, early in my career when I got hurt, I basically was watching Trent Dilfer come in. And there were certain things that happened with him. Like, I've used the example before, like second and one, under no circumstances were we ever going to throw the ball. We were going to use tempo and we were going to get a running play called. And that was kind of a Trent Dilfer, Mike Holmgren thing to sort of help the offensive line, have a great day, take advantage of second and one. If you get a 2 yard run on second and one, that's a success for us. It's a huge success, and it sort of helps out the O-line. Later in my career, I think I learned things more about the communication, how it's working on the sidelines between wide receiver groups and their coach, maybe running back groups and their coach, understanding how it is important to spread the ball around and get the ball, you know, get each guy feeling like they're involved in the game. you know, there was a stretch there when Bobby Engram was our just kind of our third down specialist, where he literally wouldn't even come on the field sometimes until like third down. And that was his only chance to touch the ball. But being on the sidelines, getting to see how, hey, he's just not in a rhythm. It's been 16 minutes since he's touched the football, you know, understanding things like that. So I'm not exactly sure, you know, what exactly Russ is going to learn. But I do know this. He will be leading from the sideline. He may not be under center, but he'll be helping Geno. He'll be helping the offensive line. He'll be kind of like, sometimes I call it great marinara sauce over yesterday's pasta. It's like he's going to do things that are not, maybe not necessarily, you know, you can't even explain it. You just know it's super, super, super important. Mm. And so the fact that he's going to be able to be on the sidelines, I think will help the team.
Well, and it's interesting. He doesn't have to be on the sidelines, right? We've had these conversations before, like, why isn't player X on the sidelines? Why are they up in the suite or not at the game or this, that, and the other? I would assume Russell will be there on the sidelines, right?
Usually that's like a safety issue. So like I know like if you've got, say you torn you have a torn MCL or something and you're on crutches, they don't want you on the sidelines because, you know, if a play happens on the sidelines, you can't protect yourself. That's not what we want. So I think that's usually determined by kind of a health and safety thing.
Oh, that never even dawned on me that that would be the case. That makes perfect sense. And certainly with a finger, he should be all right to be over there. I got to imagine this is just killing him. And I do also think if he comes back quickly, if we see him at the front end of this 3 to 4 weeks, that says something about his investment still in Seattle. And there are all these questions about whether Russ is interested in being here long term. And, you know, they're speculating on it. Greg Olson was speculating before the game on Thursday night. If he's back in 4 weeks, I got to imagine he's still at least somewhat invested in trying to play here, right?
Well, I would imagine so. I mean, to what you do in terms of putting your body on the line each and every week, I mean, you better be all the way invested, and I believe that he is. You know, I think the other thing that's going to happen is that he's going to be in more of a coach's mode for this, you know, almost a month here. And so he and Shane will have opportunities instead of, like, he's running plays at practice and Shane's watching them and calling them. You know, Shane will be calling plays at practice and Russell and Shane will be kind of together sort of talking through each of these plays as they're happening, both at practice and both in games. And so, you know, like time spent on task, I think you kind of just get more invested even, you know, that way. So it'll be really interesting to see. But I do know this. It's not like you have a little break. It's not like it's like a little vacation. It's very important to stay fit and, you know, do all the other things, train your body as if you're playing a game, because when that time is, I mean, 3 weeks sounds really early to me. I would have guessed more like 4 or 5 weeks.
Well, it's 4 weeks, 3 games is what I should have said. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Gotcha.
They got the bye in there. So they can go three games in 4 weeks in theory.
It's always funny how, like, coaches have such a high tolerance for their players' pain. You know, the doctor will be like, oh, it's 6 to 8 weeks. And they're like, all right, great. You'll be back in 6 weeks. It's like,
thanks.
You know, it's really
funny.
It's
just because coaches are optimists. You know that. All coaches are optimists. Well, sure.
And honestly, that's the best way to approach it. And I think any athlete, if a doctor tells you, hey, it's going to be 6 weeks, you're saying it's going to be 5. If he says it's 5, it's going to be 4. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the mindset that you approach rehab with.
Really good stuff there. Matt Hasselbeck, who joins us every Wednesday at 9 o'clock for a full hour, and you can hear some of the best of that at 6:30 Thursday morning. Just cool to hear from Matt. And I love anytime you get an opportunity to hear, like, friends talk like that, guys who, you know, have known each other as long as he and Hutch have and played together and were in the trenches together and all of that. Just the familiarity, the comfort level, the respect they have for each other, but also, you know, the amount of busting that goes on as well is
totally
generally like what makes that stuff special.
On TV, you just see him kind of yelling through helmets. You never really hear voices and you imagine what it sounds or looks like. It's great.
Yeah, pretty cool. All right, coming up next, it is the greatest honor in team sports, but it does come with a huge amount of responsibility, which isn't always fun. What a veteran reliever and a hockey defenseman can teach us about the Seahawks. Next, Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.